It'll be first and 25. This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating and now available in Pumpkin Spice. I'm Ben Ostro, the founder and editor-in-chief of Football Zebras, joined by senior editor Mark Schultz, editor Cam Philippe, and our contributing writer, Patrick Weber. So 2 weeks down, and we do have a lot to talk about. So we'll start in Kansas City. And there was the 4th and 16, an incomplete pass, but the Chiefs get new life on their game-winning drive. Bengals defensive back Deshaun Anthony flagged for defensive pass interference on a pass intended for Rashee Rice. And side judge Lovam Pham had the call. So I'll start with you, Mark. What did you think about that?
That's straight-up pass interference. Everybody is upset about it. But plain and simple, the defender cannot play through the back of the receiver to catch the ball or to defend the ball. He got there early. He played through the back. Easy call, in my opinion.
I think a lot of what the outrage is about is less about the call. You will see, you know, some Bengals fans and social media comments somehow saying that it was not DPI, but I think a lot of what the outrage is that the flag came late, and this is audio only, but I'm using air quotes around late because there's no such thing as a late flag as we know. But I think it led to more controversy because the ball was tipped far in advance, allowing the camera, the television broadcast, to pan to the side judge on the play and show that the flag came in later than most people might expect. But, you know, that just speaks to his ability to slow the game down, process the play, and then be able to make a proper judgment. Just because the flag came out late, it doesn't mean what all the conspiracy theories are claiming, that he waited to see that the pass was going to fall incomplete and then decided to throw the flag.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a great point, Cam. You know, one of the biggest axioms in officiating in any sport is you need to see the whole play, the beginning, the action, and the end of the play before you can make a decision. And I think sometimes people forget, I mean, it takes, you got to make the decision and then find your flag and throw the flag. You can't just magic the flag onto the field. So there's always going to be that second or two.
I'm the king of remembering random plays in random games from a decade ago. And this reminds me of a play. It was in a 2013 divisional game in New England where there was a pass interference, and the field judge on the play, actually, there was a pass interference. The field judge actually signaled incomplete pass before throwing his flag. Sometimes it's just the way you process and personal preference in terms for how you work through that entire play. And it speaks very well to that of wanting to be able to see everything.
Well, and you point out that there's multiple things happening at the end of the play. It's the play is dead, and we need to signal that because we have a clock operator that is looking for a signal as well. And although, you know, some cases, yeah, they will see the ball land. But one of the things that people don't realize, that the clock operators are not sitting high on the 50-yard line. That's prime real estate in the NFL stadiums. So they're sometimes in the 5-yard line or the opposite end zone, and they're looking 90 yards down the field. And if there's an incomplete pass near the sideline, it looks obvious to everybody, but they need to have demonstrable signals that no, incomplete. And then they can kill the clock. Even when it seems obvious, there's situations like that. I want to just add a little bit to, there are multiple things that come into this whole fallacy of late flags. And in this case, when you did see Lovam Pham come into focus on the camera angle, he's already winding up because he's trying to project that flag maybe about 15 yards down to where the spot of the foul is. So that also is going to take a split second. Add up all these split seconds. I don't know if you can relay it to something that in your personal experience as far as, you know, it's not what is a good time to wait, but, you know, kind of step us through that play right there, which the common fan says, oh, that's a definite DPI on that play. We can all see it. Where's the flag? Why the delay? So kind of step through your process as you're looking at that.
When I see a potential infraction, I'd make sure in my mind first that, yes, that's an infraction. Then I measure its result, how it impacts the play. Now, pass interference is pretty quick to judge the result of the play. In my years at umpire, I would judge holding. I say, well, the left guard held. Well, the play went right. So I'm not going to flag that because it didn't have an effect on the play. Sometimes the center held, and I say, okay, center's holding, and the play goes right up the middle, and the runner would be 5 yards past me, and then my flag would come out and flutter into the line of scrimmage. And people say, oh, that's a late flag. No, I was just judging the impact of the play. So a late flag isn't, conspiracy theorists love it, but a late flag is actually sometimes a good flag.
Yeah, you know, I work line of scrimmage, and kind of to Mark's point, one thing we've been taught with holding especially is kind of, you know, you see the start of it, and then you want to see where the play goes and see what happens, and kind of the timing in your head is, all right, that's a hold, that's a hold, yeah, that's a hold, now I'm throwing.
Especially at the lower levels, there are times where you'd like to give the benefit of the doubt. I like to point to a Jim Tunney quote where he once said, you know, oh, you don't say, I think it's holding, I'll throw the flag. No, you know it's holding. You have to be sure that it's holding. You can't officiate any other way. It's one of my favorite officiating quotes from him. And I think the same thing applies here, to be able to look at the play in its totality, judge its impact, if it's gaining a competitive advantage, and then from there making the decision. And just because the flag came out 2 seconds after the rest of the world or the rest of the stadium is expecting it, doesn't mean that that decision wasn't made 2 seconds earlier when they were all expecting the flag to come out.
And just to kind of, for those that don't really get into the weeds as to what defensive pass interference is, all officials pretty much have it committed to memory, but you're looking for one of for defensive pass interference, it's at least an arm bar, hold and grab and restrict, not playing the ball, playing through the back, hook and turn, and cutoff. And what you're looking at in when this is happening, like, okay, I see something that happened. One of the things that officials will do is they will try to compartmentalize it. Did I see that? What was the aspect that was in play there? So you're thinking through this. It's, okay, he is playing through the back. I got that. Now, as the ball is sailing out, it was very clearly a catchable ball, but you still have to go through your mental checklist and knock off everything and say, okay, it was catchable, and then make an acknowledgement to that. It's kind of like when flying an airplane, you know, the pilot knows everything, and they still have to go through the checklist before they take off. So same thing with this. You want to make sure that you don't want to put a flag down and have to pick it up. I mean, if it's wrong, it's wrong, and you do pick it up. But especially in a situation like that, where it's the failed fourth and 16 that sustains the drive, you got to put that flag down. You have to have a decisive, opinion about the play. You have to be really deliberate in your actions there at all times of the game, but especially then when everybody's watching. Let's stay in Kansas City because there was another incident earlier in the game. And we had Ja'Marr Chase drawing a dead ball unsportsmanlike conduct foul for verbally abusing referee Alex Kemp. Now, Chase was looking for a flag for a hip drop tackle. We can kind of get into the merits of that argument in a little bit. But let's first start with the unsportsmanlike conduct foul, which after like a second volley of going after Alex Kemp, that's when the flag came out, and it came out pretty swiftly. So there was an interview post-game, a pool report, and Alex Kemp says it's pretty clear-cut. It's just simply abusive language towards a game official. That's all it was. There really was no interpretation. And so we do get into this, well, where do you draw that line? And so the follow-up answer was, as he says, the simple answer is profanity used by grown men versus direct, personal, abusive language towards a game official. That's the line. I think we've had this come up multiple times where you try and explain it. And right there, I think we just really hit the nail on the head.
That's the absolute definition for what unsportsmanlike conduct should be in the NFL if somebody verbally abuses an official. If somebody calls the official names, if somebody tells an official to do unnatural acts, if somebody accuses an official of cheating, that is an immediate cause for an unsportsmanlike conduct flag in the NFL. I'll tell you what, though, NFL officials take a lot before they throw a flag.
And it's also important, I think, to distinguish the difference. And he did a very good job, Kemp did, in the pool report. I remember being trained my very first year as an official where, you know, if a player in frustration either with himself or a teammate, you know, uses an obscenity, let's just say, you know, he's frustrated, he goes, oh, blank. That's a completely different thing compared to turning to an opponent and instead of saying, oh, blank, saying blank you, when it's directed to, targeted at whether an opponent or an official, it's pretty clear that that's where the line is. And I don't think he could have explained it any better in the pool report.
Yeah, I also think, you know, from the optics standpoint, just outside looking in, you know, people talk about, you know, football is obviously an emotional game. And that's a pretty big moment in the game. And they want the players to be able to express that emotion. And I think just looking at the play, Kemp let him have his first outburst. And then Chase goes back for a second and third time. And that's when the flag comes out. I mean, obviously something got said that makes it a little more immediate, but Kemp obviously let him have his say at the beginning before it got anything elevated.
It reminds me of the Joey Bosa, Sean Smith incident a couple years ago. Smith gave him the opportunity to back out of it, but he doubled down. So it's a similar thing, not entirely the same, but pretty close.
Well, and that's what you're looking at is it's that follow-up. And, you know, some of the old guard officials, you know, they've written their memoirs and they've got stories of what they've had to deal with, particularly wing officials on the sideline. They have the coach's ear and the entire game. They're dealing with that. And, you know, a lot of it was like, what did you say? You know, when something comes out that's inappropriate. So you give them the moment to recalculate that. And just kind of like let that go, and we'll. And if they repeat it, well, then there you go. It was not enough to just say it, to blurt it out. And I gave you a chance to recant on that, and then you just doubled down. Then you earned the flag. And one other point, based on what Cam was saying. And I might misattribute the quote, but I'm pretty sure it was Mike Pereira that said it, that it's not so much the words that are said, you know, the specific blue word that is uttered. It's whether or not the pronoun you is in there. So it's basically, it's directed at the person, at the official as a person, rather than them as just, I'm the official and you're frustrated at officiating at the call that was made. Now you've made it a turn and you've personalized it and then made that avenue. And I guess the best way to compare that is to taunting, because you're trying to get in your opponent's head. And so, you know, and then that stirs things up. But when it comes to officiating, there needs to be like a big firewall in there. You do not want to give the impression that one player has gotten one over on the referee. I don't know if you've dealt with this at in any of your games where someone's just really pushing that boundary. You give them that leeway, but then they break through. And whether or not you carry that through the game, you know, maybe if something happens, you're like, yeah, maybe I should have dropped it. And now it's in your head. Is that a thing?
It has been somewhat on the high school level. If coaches start getting over the line, sometimes I'm like, Coach, I don't think you want to repeat that. I think you need to, we're stopping here and we're moving on. In high school, I have had a player, to quote Vin Scully, yell at me that my call was fertilizer, and I flagged him. He didn't say your fertilizer, he said my call was fertilizer. The high school rule book is much more strict and draws a more strict line at what is worthy of an unsportsmanlike conduct. I don't know, Cam and Pat, if you've experienced that or not, but that's what I flagged before. And at two, he said, you know, he shouted it out to his teammates on the field and the other 11 across the way. So if I let that go, everybody on the field says, well, they can call my calls fertilizer all night and he's not going to do anything.
Yeah, you know, working three sports, I've definitely had my fair share. But to your last point, Mark, I think sometimes, especially not with newer officials, but, you know, certain officials that people like to talk about us as being thin-skinned sometimes when we deal with outbursts like this and penalize it. But at the same time, just because it bothers us or not, we have to set a line of what's allowable and what's not. Because we condone what we don't take action on, you know, and I know there's some officials that don't draw that line and it doesn't bother them, which is fine. But now we're allowing that behavior to continue to other crews and showing the other participants that we're just gonna let them do whatever they want. And it kind of, you know, we talk about integrity. If you're going to allow everything to happen and deal with none of it at a certain point, it kind of shoot your credibility.
I think that's a great point, because I feel like one of my biggest weaknesses as an official is exactly that. I'm okay with taking whatever. And I do a lot of soul searching, especially the beginning of each season, where, you know, to Pat's point, which I think was an amazing point, is yes, personally, I can take it. I don't really care what's said to me. But if I let it get to a certain point, the coach or whoever, at least in my area of the country, the players are never the problem. The players are always great. It's usually the coaches. But by letting a coach get away with however many times he says a certain thing, because I can handle it, well, maybe the wing official the following week has a tighter leash. And not only does it speak to integrity, it speaks to consistency. Because it's something we hear a lot, not just about unsportsmanlike, but I'll keep it on this topic, is something to the effect of, well, last week they didn't call it when I did this or when they did this. So, you know, yeah, sometimes I think about that. I had a player, my game on Friday night, I was a line judge this past Friday. was tripped up about 3 yards before the goal line and spiked the ball in frustration. And I, you know, I kind of walked up to him and said, "You don't want to do that again." And midway through my sentence, the white hat rocketed his flag up. He wasn't going to take it, even though I was going to just give him a warning with it. So again, it totally speaks to integrity, as Pat said, but also to consistency week to week.
Well, as for the case that Chase was making, that there was a hip drop, it was more of a neck drop. Yeah, there was contact to his legs, but all the other signatures of the hip drop were missing. So it really was not a foul to begin with. Okay, and we have about 4 minutes left, so we want to kind of take a look at something that not only impressed us, it impressed a lot of people. So generally, when an official is trending or we see a lot of video of it, it's usually a bad thing. We saw a lot of people sharing this one clip, and it's back judge Tyree Walton on a 97-yard touchdown in the Niners-Vikings game. Not only did he have to stop, turn around, but he was on the goal line for that touchdown call. So he had to stop to allow the play to you know, so he didn't get mixed up in the play. And then even the last 3 or 4 yards, he was doing that backwards. And a lot of people, you know, the common fans noticed that. So technique wise or things, what did you see?
10 out of 10 for technique, amazing speed. And all I know is my kneecaps would have fallen off at the first cut.
This is another prime example of being happy that move with purpose mechanics are gone. Because especially on a long play like this, if this play had happened last season, he probably would have stopped it, I don't know, maybe the 50, and just watched him go by and then trailed. These are the mechanics that we've seen all along, and now they're back. And not only that, but, you know, I don't think we've seen this much reaction to something like this since Todd Prukop's 30-yard flag toss. It was probably about a decade ago. And I pulled up the league's official X account, actually highlighted him and, you know, did a little ISO on him, and it says, "Ref got wheels, give him a contract." We don't usually see things like that, especially from the league's official account. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, you know, it's always great seeing stuff like this and having it get highlighted. And I think if people pay a little more attention, I know no one's really watching the ref except for other refs. This stuff kind of happens more than people think. I know there's perception that officials are all still old and out of shape from, you know, the 70s, 80s, whatever, but that is not really how it is in today's world. You know, if you watch a high-level college game or an NFL game, most of those deep wings and back judges, they got wheels too.
And that's one of the things we're seeing is, yeah, that there is obviously an older cohort in the NFL, just simply based on the fact that everybody's got to prove themselves at the lower levels. But yeah, they have to be in shape. It's not a very timid, you know, off season kind of, they're working out all the time. Some of them have gyms in their house just to make it a lot easier for them. The NFL always pushes physical fitness. There's a battery of physicals that are done in the off season because they don't want somebody going out there and all of a sudden something happens. But the one thing is that when we do have some of these calls where something gets shared and there's like universal praise, there's usually one team that still is kind of biting their tongue on the call. This one was 100% universal, and it was quite unusual to see that, but a welcome change at that. So that wraps up another episode of the First and 25 podcast. Thanks to Cam Philippe, Mark Schultz, and Patrick Weber. I'm Ben Ostro. We'll be dropping a new episode every Tuesday throughout the season, and please spread the word. If you're listening on the Football Zebras website, you can find us on your preferred podcasting app, and please subscribe. Many thanks for listening.